Welcome to the XSF podcast, hosted by Devontae Erlinson and Louis Bombadiri. Everyone is capable of being extreme. Tune in Fridays to discover how you are too. This podcast is brought to you by Third Layer Skate Park and Skate Shop, located in Golden Valley, Minnesota. If you guys are ever in the area, make sure you stop on in. And if you want to talk about skaters supporting skaters, this is the place you want to be. They got boards, shoes, trucks, wheels, even their own apparel. So when you go out to get those clips and land those tricks, they got you set. And they also have an amazing skate park. So make sure if you are in to check that out. And you also can book yourself a skate lesson if you really want to learn some new tricks. And if you have kids out there who want to learn to skate, make sure you get them in to the skate camps they have. They're amazing times and good for kids to learn and have a great time. The skate community is the best, and Third Layer really is showing how to do it. And if you can't stop in, make sure you check them out online at thirdlayer.com. That's 3RDLAIR.com. And if you want to talk about landing tricks, getting clips, make sure you check out Monte Coso Skateboards. Those skateboards, I'm telling you, are the most durable thing you'll ride. I've jumped down huge gaps, huge stairs, big rails. It's hit walls, no chips, nothing. It's crazy. Best skateboards out there. I love them. And they're Minnesota. So, hey, skaters, support skaters. Check them out on Instagram. You can find them at MonteCoso Skateboards. That's at Monte Coso Skateboards. And make sure, if you guys hit them up to get yourself some boards or apparel, you ask them for the discount code XSF to get 10% off. Also brought to you by
Batch Roasting Co. Batch is an ethnically sourced, minority-owned, organic, fair trade coffee company roasting out of Brooklyn, New York. Let me tell you, Batch is some great people making some great coffee. Trust me, I'm a self-proclaimed coffee connoisseur. I've had delicious coffee all over the place. And when I tell you Batch is some of the best coffee I've ever had, I'm not just saying that. You know what I mean? We just don't let anyone be our sponsor. You know what I'm saying? We jive with our products that sponsor us. So trust me when I tell you Batch is some of the best coffee. You can find Batch on Instagram at BatchRoastingCo. That's Batch Roasting Co. You can check out their website, BatchRoastingCo.com. BatchRoasting.com. Type in L-Bomb at checkout for 15% off your entire order. That's L-B-O-M-B at the checkout. Go get some delicious coffee by some amazing humans. Our sponsor, Jetty Woodwork. Jetty Woodwork is a veteran-owned and operated woodworking company out of Long Beach, New York. They are great people creating great products. I personally bought a custom board for my brother, a cutting board. He got Mr. Sheffin, and we got a little custom cutting board for him. They're doing MB on it. Little pot plant on there for us because, you know, he's a marijuana enthusiast. So, amazing product. It's amazing stuff they do over there. All their wood is locally sourced. Their cutting boards are 100% organic. And like I just said, they'll custom, they'll put anything you want on there. There's great people doing great things. Definitely check them out. You can find them on Instagram at JETTY Woodwork. That's Jetty Woodwork. JETTY Woodwork.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the XSF podcast. Today, I got a special guest. This is somebody I look up to. He's been somebody that I've had conversations with in the past, and he's opened up my eyes to different ways of training, and I know he's doing that for multiple other people out there. So I got James Thayer here with me and Louis. So James, if you could introduce yourself, tell us a little bit of your background, what you've been doing in training, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. So I'm James Thayer. I'm an assistant director of fitness and wellness, a Prescript lab coach, an ACE master trainer, and a little bit about my background. The majority of my career has been spent through campus recreation. So a university recreation from my undergrad through master's into my professional career, kind of developing through different levels of that. And with that, it's created some exposure to a robust level or a robust exposure of the fitness industry. So I've been a personal trainer. I've been group fitness instructor through several group fitness classes, like cycling, boot camp, kettlebell. At one point I was even teaching yoga classes, not something that I've stuck with, but just through that career, it created a this need for wanting to learn more in the fitness space and trying to create the exposure and introduction to those based on the demand of the places I was working. Because of that, caused me to pursue or reach out into the fitness industry, because I didn't necessarily have somebody with a fitness background that I worked under, or a mentor at that development stage of my career. And so with that, just trying to go to presentations, conferences, workshops, from not one organization or one company, but several. And I think that's really helped me in my career now, because I'm able to, in my own programming or programming for others, I don't necessarily limit myself in good or bad exercises. It's more so I focus on like a movement-based approach and how to implement those in a program when they're necessary, when they're not necessary, whenever they hold value or when they don't hold value. As far as programming for clients, I think part of it is it's kind of finding a balance of a problem solution model. So what are some issues that they're dealing with and how can we correct those? Can always call it corrective exercise, warm up, prehab, whatever you want. But what it comes down to is it's all focused on how the body moves in space and time. And so anything can be an aspect of a warm up, a workout, a cool down. It's just the context that we apply it to and the lens that we're looking at it through. So I try to do that with my own programming and my clients' programming.
That's awesome. So there's a couple of things like I want to touch on that I love that you said there. So you're talking about just knowing your body in space, and that's just huge to me, especially with skateboarding and stuff. I mean, that's just of utmost importance. If you don't understand or know how to articulate your body in space and like just feel that, you're not going to be too good on that skateboard that day. So I love that you brought that up. And also just seeing how you have all that different, like the different stuff you went through. So all the different educations you went through, all the different teaching stuff you did. So the yoga all the way to now doing what you do today. Would you say that doing that stuff definitely has helped you create that mindset of looking through that lens of what you look through when it comes to programming right now? Like, because I know some people, they get so engulfed into like one certificate or, you know, one certification, whatever you want to say, or, you know, however they decide to go. And that's like the only thing they see. So I think the people who, you know, like yourself, who've been able to go different avenues like that, they seem to have a different way of looking at things. So I'm just wondering if you've noticed any of that from those pursuits yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a huge benefit in our industry and in our space to try to learn as much as possible from different mediums, but also apply that, like spend the time to learn it and understand the techniques of it, the reasons and the context behind it. And then that will help provide whenever it is the right lens to apply that into programming. Mm-hmm. So to kind of add to that a little bit, whenever I first started working out, I think I was 12, and we had a junior high weights program, and pretty much since then have continued through, you know, there, my introduction to the weight room was in direct relation to sports, that I didn't have this entry of trying to get bigger or like trying to make muscles or anything like that, that, you know, some younger kids will have the focus, like an aesthetic focus that they introduce it into, or maybe even an insecurity that they're trying to build up. Mm-hmm. Really, my introduction was through sports. And so it was always a focus of, this made you better at sports. And so that drove through and always kind of helped me keep in the weight room and keep that focus. until sports was no longer a thing, and then really helped with that transition of the weight room is not only health benefits, but also a career path that I want to take. And so I think because of that introduction, I wasn't ever reduced down to one system that I used. We went through in high school, I think we did bigger, faster, stronger, kind of typical high school weights program. But I didn't know what that program was. I just know this is how we lift that. And then whenever we weren't doing the program, just go grab weights and move it in different directions and see what parts of the body it's working and where you're feeling it. And I think because of that approach, like it was blissful ignorance of not knowing a system or not knowing a program, that as I continued to grow in the space, that I was a lot more open to what I was doing. Never really had that like bodybuilder mentality where I ran down just that soul tunnel of like trying to get big or work out how a bodybuilder works out. Not that there's anything wrong with that for whoever had that introduction in the space. That just wasn't mine. But again, because of that, I think it helped facilitate where I am now, that I was open and willing to look at different systems or different programs, approaches, and see what worked for me and try to build that context or build a foundation of understanding. So I know, okay, well, this works in this setting, or this works through this lens, and this is how they're applying it. And never a this and only this approach. It's well, hey, they're programming for strength, and so that's why they're doing this. They're programming for a specific sport, and that's why these things are here. Or this person has a hypertrophy focus, so they're going to drive higher volume, or maybe they're going to utilize a lot more machines. So different things like that. Just, I think, just subconsciously, as I was building into the space, I was taking note of that. And so whenever it carried over to the professional side of it, pairing that with education, there was that understanding of there can be purpose for all these things. It's just, is it the right purpose or the right time to try to implement those?
Yeah, and that's something like how we're talking about today. Just, I feel like a lot of people, especially right now, with, you know, either not wanting to go to gyms because of the situation, or your gym's not being open, whatever it may be, where people are, I think that seems a little bit difficult because there is such a influx of fitness information, quote unquote, I would say, coming out through the internet, you know, and it's just coming to a lot of people. And I feel like that leaves a lot of confusion out there of like, okay, so like, what is best for me? How do I know, like, well, like, if you know your goal, like, oh, how do I know, like, where to go from there? And for like yourself, right, if you had, because, you know, thinking of like skateboarding and stuff, if you had like an athlete who came to you, and with the way you train, like, what I'm thinking when I see your Instagram videos and stuff like that, when you're doing stuff, and, you know, I see you squatting heavyweight, I see you deadlifting heavyweight, but then I also see you playing around with bands on, I believe, what was that, a hyperextension machine you were using?
Yeah, reverse hyper.
Reverse hyper, yeah. So, you know, all the way to that. So when it comes to that, and it comes to the way you're choosing your exercises, what would you give advice for somebody out there, like myself, a skateboarder, or even just like general population, when it comes to just figuring out where to start for themselves?
Yeah. So as far as kind of general population coming into the space, understand that there needs to be a phase of GPP, general physical preparedness, that a lot of people want to come into working out, especially this time of year being the new year, where they just want to jump into a program and never really set a baseline to get themselves ready. So I think starting with a simple program, like find some exercise that you like, find some exercise that you're able to consistently do, and start building a capacity in that. Like, don't worry about load at the beginning. Worry about trying to build up enough volume that you're efficient in the movement, And then in the next block or the following block, depending on what your history is, depending on what your injuries and your experience in the gym is, then we can start looking at introducing different exercises, or we can introduce or look at introducing load. If we're looking at the dynamics of periodization of time, distance, load, let's hold off on load, because if we can progress the other two, it gives us an ability to hold load, or I guess it gives us the ability that we're all, load is going to be the fastest that hits a plateau. And so if we pull that too soon, or we try to drive on that too early, that we'll hit that plateau. And more than likely, we haven't set a foundation of mobility or stability for that strength, or just a general work capacity that we're efficient at the movements that we're trying to apply. And that's where we can start seeing some inefficiencies in movement. That's where we can start seeing some compensation patterns, some injuries. And typically, if those start developing, the person's not going to be consistent. And the truth of it is, you can get results a lot of different ways. It's really that it comes from consistency. And so whenever people lose that consistency, that's where we see drop-off points, or that's where we see people never truly able to progress long-term, because they haven't built up that foundation in a way that they can stay consistent through time to really see results that they're trying to get to. Because it's not about, you know, so many people chase, like they enter into programs that are so load focused because they want to get a bigger total, or they just want to get stronger in this lift, where it kind of ruins them moving forward. So some of these programs where, you know, you might be squatting four times a week or every day in a month. Okay, what are you going to do the next month? Because you can't maintain that, especially if through that month of, you know, squatting four times or even every day, that it was driving the load. Like, you're not going to be able to maintain that volume long term. So the next month, what do you do? It's setting people up for failure almost by entering these systems too soon or not understanding the context of them. I'm sure both of you are pretty familiar with like some of the like German volume training, like Bulgarian training, like very, very load volume based training. The context of, or the, I guess the iteration of those though are, is like understanding the history and the context again of how that came about. That it came about from trying to produce Olympic athletes, and you had, it was state run program. So you had 100 people that you could work through, and you were trying to find the one badass that could make it through that. The one person that didn't get injured, that survived that volume and that intensity. And yeah, they were going to be a specimen coming through it, but they were willing to sacrifice 99 people to get there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that the average gym bro going in, like, this program's probably not for you, bud. You're not at that level, but people don't understand it. They just see, oh, I did this and I saw results, not understanding it wasn't the program. There's nothing magic to it. It was the fact that you ran volume at that intensity that you were able to see results. But this is also why in 3 to 6 months, you're having issues and you can't squat anymore.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of people run into, like you said, it's just they plateau. They don't know where to go from there. And it leaves them just wondering, okay, well, what program do I get next? Like, is it the program that I'm doing? Do I have to buy a different system? Like, what is going on? And it's just, you know, having the, like, I mean, it's just like that, laying the bricks, you know, laying the foundation. It's just like that analogy. You have to start and have that base so you can build upon that. Even as you're getting up to like the point where like we're all at and we've been training for so long, we still do those things. It's not that we don't do those things. It's just the stuff you see on Instagram. I mean, James, yourself, you're good at showing, like, I mean, I think we all are good at showing like the stuff we're doing just kind of on the days we're exploring ourselves. You know, I know you've said that yourself, how, you know, the stuff that sometimes you're posting with all the hip airplanes and all that stuff. And, you know, the gatekeepers and all that is just on the days when you're really figuring out what works for you and you're sharing that with others. And I think that's what it comes down to, is just people not watching what to do, like at least like understand like what exercises are there, you know, like understand that. I'm not saying like just willy-nilly, but I'm sure you can figure out and know a base at which you can start at to just start moving your body and figure out how you feel within yourself and in space. And I know like Louis yourself, I don't know if you want to like kind of cover like for your, like blue collar workers and like all that stuff that we were discussing, but you know, for that whole situation, like knowing, like for general population, for those people who are still working those like hard demanding jobs, like this is very important, like understanding, like starting at that base level, that's going to really get you to the point where you can start doing that. Like you said, you can call corrective exercise or whatever you want to call it. But so you're able to perform your best in your job. I think Louis, that'd be kind of cool to talk about in your lane if you want for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, for like construction, blue collar work, all that, it really is trying to get them to exercise correctly. Cause most of the move, I mean, if you think about it, when you're doing blue collar work, you're swinging a hammer, you're lifting things up, you're splicing above head, even driving a truck all day, you're in positions, whether it's a flexed hip all day or your hands are above head all day, they're in positions that ideally we aren't always in, and they're in them typically, I'll quotate, wrong, you know, because they're not stacking their ribs over their pelvis. They're not thinking about the scap. They're not thinking about their rhomboids. They're not thinking about anything we'll be thinking about. So it comes down for me is picking the exercises that are going to get them into a stable position and will have the mobility to get there, get them in a stable position, and then build some strength there to raise the capacity that they're able to work with. Because my whole thing is having guys be able to, or guys and girls, to be able to work long forever, not forever, but work a lot longer. So when you get that retirement check, you're not, you can enjoy it. You can now live your life longer, you know, even when you go home from your job. A lot of the things we do at work, it's taxing on the body. And if you're not consciously thinking about the body and taking care of it like it's your number one tool, then yeah, you're gonna feel that. You know, it's, again, it's really, really baseline, like starting them in isometrics, starting them real small to understand how they should be positioning their body, and then building on that. You know, that's my general outline for when I'm dealing with blue collar, unless you get some people that, there's some people in the space that they're about it. They're about working out. They're into the whole thing. You know, they'll go try that German lifting type things. You know, they got that mentality for it. They'll try it. Doesn't mean it's going to work, but you know, they get the mentality. So that's when you can now assess them, see where they're at, and now further produce, you know, get more of a load on them and all that. But really in the very beginning, it's having everyone understand the proper really positions we're trying to get them in. Also to mitigate all the pain we're in. I mean, if you look at statistics, it's always slipping and falling and low back pain that keeps people out. Now, why would that be? That also goes back to not knowing where your body is in space, slipping and falling, you know? You're used to doing this one task at hand. Now you actually do one little thing that you're not used to and you get injured, you know? So it's training for all that. And if you ask me too, so it all boils down to the same things, you know, exercising correctly will mitigate your corrective exercise and all your pains and aches, all that stuff. Not saying it's definitely not going to happen. People get injured, but it'll definitely help you work longer for sure. That's my take on it.
Yeah, no. And I like that you said like that the end range, so like getting the mobility to find that end range and then testing that end range. And James, I know you're good at this as well, and I'd kind of like you to just cover when you're doing that, right? When you're doing like the reverse hyper, and you're doing like the payoff press, or like the other day you're doing the rotational work. When you're doing stuff like that, and you're finding those isometric positions, if I could talk this morning, when you're thinking of ways to test that end range or to challenge that isometric position, what do you find yourself gravitating to more? So I know a lot of people, when they think like isometrics, they might only think like, you know, pushing up into the pins, or they might think like a wall sit or something of that sort, when there's so much more to it. I'm just wondering kind of how you decide to go about that and how you pick the modalities at which you train with.
Yeah. So as far as like my specific training, kind of how it's set up, I have 4 days where it's pretty traditional strength training. And those are programmed through my coach following it. And if you want to break it down, it's pretty standardized of a horizontal pressing movement, a squat vertical pressing movement, and a deadlift. And so around those is kind of built down to the accessories to help opposing muscle groups off a secondary, and then accessories more so in isolation to feed back into whatever the primary lift is, like a bench or a squat. And then I typically keep 1 or 2 days from that programming is more of a like experiment testing day, or not necessarily testing in the sense of like testing towards failure, but more so dynamics of an exercise and like where there is validity in application to different exercise, and more so, and kind of like a gatekeeper in itself or a test all. So one thing I've talked about, like with the hip airplane, why I'll post hip airplane stuff is not that the hip airplane is a magical exercise that everyone needs to do. Like, I post it because it facilitates a conversation of, I can do this because I've built the mobility and stability, that this is now an expression of that ability. And it's only because I've built these foundations that I'm able to express this. So it's kind of a, in part, like some of those things, it's to start with the conversation, because in the social media space, a lot of the questions I'll get is, this helps, if I did this, it'd probably be good with it, or it'd probably help this. So like with the hip airplane, a lot of times it's, oh, I should do this because it'll help with my hip mobility or my hip stability. Whereas it should be kind of I try to help it facilitate the conversation that we should reverse engineer the thinking of that we need to look at, you need better hip mobility and stability. It's not this exercise that's going to get you that. It's this exercise is just that I have that ability and can express that. There's a long line of things we can do before getting to that. So we might never need a hip airplane. Again, I do it because it's kind of built up over years. And I guess at this point, decades, that's terrifying to think about. Because that ability has continued to build up, where now it's in a program for me that I can use it as a check all that, hey, maybe I'll go through this whole, kind of the whole dynamic of it, of an RDL to a hip airplane to the sprinter pose to a lunge, and I'll use 2 steps of that for a squat warm up and kind of a check all that, okay, no issues here, no balance, or no limited range of motion that I need to work on, no limitations in stability. And I went and just squatted the bar, no issues, no pain. I was able to hit depth. I was able to express force. Okay, cool. So now we're going back through and just building to that warm-up set. So it's utilizing the least amount of work possible so we can actually get into the workout. So whenever I'm going through and doing, having those exploring days or like more creative days, it's kind of seen in the guise of like, I'm running a checklist in my system of, okay, like this position is great for this. This is too much intensity that I wouldn't want it here. This is letting me know like where there's limitations or where there's not. So for example, like the mace swings, like that is a very, very high demand of shoulder mobility, scapular stability, to be able to swing through that pendulum, to go through flexion, extension of the shoulder, abduction, adduction, elevation and depression of the scapula, to kind of go through all those different realms of the shoulder's ability, using that as more so a check all for me. I wouldn't say that people need to do the mace swing, but for me, because I have the ability to express through those in ranges, that I can now use that again as a gatekeeper exercise for my shoulders at one of the highest points. And to go back to some of the original conversation, like understand how our bodies move in space. So a lot of those things that have been mentioned, like the reverse hyper with Palloff press or the single arm one, mace swings, there's a dynamic of that, of a changing force vector because of the pendulum motion of both of those, that we have to understand not only where our body is in space, but how that is moving in space, because it's going to have different intensities or different tension across those movements. And whenever we can navigate that, we have a better awareness of when that's applied to a more static position or a more bilaterally loaded position, as kind of a check all for ourselves, that we can start identifying where there might be compensation patterns, or even to the point of where things might be feeling off. We can better identify that because we've laid the groundwork through some of these lower intensity, more exposed exercises, like something that's incorporating a lever arm or a pendulum swing to it, or like a unilateral movement, that we've created that gradient exposure across several levels and even spent some time in progressing those, that now whenever it feeds back into a, again, more bilaterally loaded or higher intensity movement, that we know how it should move, know how it should feel. And whenever that's off, it gives us the sign that, hey, we need to try to identify what's going on here. And hopefully that identification is coming sooner into those more exposed exercises.
No, I like, in one thing that I really like about what you're saying there was, like, when it comes to the way you warm up or the way you look at warming up, because that for me, when I'm thinking of skateboarding and stuff and the clients I work with, that's one thing they really care about, is like how fast can I get warmed up so I can skate the best that I can skate but feel good and not waste a bunch of time beforehand. So, you know, doing those movements that do you get the most for doing the least, I guess you could say, right? And when it comes to that, like you're saying, the gatekeeper and stuff, I know for skateboarding and stuff before a session like that, doing something like you just said, breaking that down, going through that checklist, like that's a great little warm up right there in itself, because it's giving you those boxes of a lot of the points that we use when we skateboard, making sure everything's stable, mobile, and you have that there. But now that we're there and we're doing that, right? So like, let's say I have a skateboarder, they're about to do the session and they're doing this warm up, but they notice a sticking point. Like, let's say they're going to do that RDL to hip airplane. And when they go to do, when they go to internally rotate, they notice just stability just is gone. Hip wants to pop out. Where do they go from there? Cause I think that's an important thing to touch on. Cause a lot of people, I know we're trying to say all this and get the message out there that, like, you got to start at that base. But I know Instagram and all that stuff, it takes over. You see all this cool stuff, you want to go do it, and it happens. But if you're there, or even if you've done your stuff and you're training and you're doing this for yourself, where do you go from there when you notice that sticking point? How do you go about that?
Yeah, so I'd say the first thing is making sure that we're spending time developing each component of it. So like, how we both mentioned, like the RDL to the hip airplane, those are two separate components. And there's even regressions to those that we need to make sure individually we're secure before we start making combinations. That combinations of movements are going to save time, and they're very, very time efficient, but we need to make sure that we're good at both individually before combining those or before progressing those, so we're not just shitty at two movements together. So if we've gone through, if we've laid that foundation, I think there's something to be said about, like, understanding how your body works. That if you're coming from that baseline of, let's say, so for a skateboarder, if we're just going to focus on the ankle for a second, like looking at dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. So if there's a limitation in that, do we need to spend more time? So like, if we're going through a RDL even, to try to like go stage by stage, if we're going through an RDL and we have a soft knee, but we notice whenever we're driving that knee that there's a limitation in our dorsiflexion or where the ankle flexes, which is very, very important in skateboarding to be able to access in ranges of dorsiflexion and produce or have that, well, it's structurally stable, but be able to go through an in range so we have an ability to produce force through plantar flexion whenever we're performing a trick or even just pushing off to gain momentum or acceleration through this course or through the pit.
And real quick for the listeners, for the skaters out there, the dorsiflexion and the plantar flexion, essentially, if you think about it, when you're skating, the plantar flexion is going to be when you're pointing those toes to the ground to push off the ground. You're pretty much just, it's like when you do a calf raise, your plantar flexion, planting your foot to the ground. Dorsiflexion is going to be when you're bending down to do those ollies, or you're landing in those crazy positions from going downstairs and your knees are traveling over your toes and stuff, and you're really bent down. That's your ankle's ability to do dorsiflexion. Just to make sure we clear that up, just because I know sometimes we get lost in all that stuff because we're talking. But go ahead, James, continue.
Yeah, perfect explanation. Thank you very much. You know your audience way better than me, so by any means, if I'm going, if I'm not breaking something down enough, please interject. Was a perfect breakdown. But yeah, so even something like that, if we're going through a RDL and we notice a limitation in our ankle's ability to flex, that we need to identify it there before we get out and into the workout or like into our skate session. And so spending more time on it, that if we go through the RDL, there's no issues. Okay, cool. Let's keep going. If we do notice it, all right. So this is, we keep talking about gate checkers. So the gate's closed, or gatekeepers. So the gate's closed at that point. Now let's spend some more time on it. Let's go down to, let's lower the level. So we can do this by putting in more of a static position. So if we were going through a single leg RDL, okay, now that leg, that back leg, that's going to come down. And now we can maybe drive that knee over the toes, using the direction of the toes to dictate the direction of our knee, because we don't want our knee driving inside of the foot or outside of the foot necessarily whenever we're trying to focus on this range of motion. We might even come down to a half kneeling position. So one knee's on the ground, one leg's up, almost like we're in a lunge, and we can start leaning into that. So we could take, if we're trying to advantage that position a little bit more or lean into it a little bit more in a statically held position where we have the stability of the ground and we have the stability of both feet on the ground and even like half kneeling, it lowers the impact of gravity or the force that gravity would have on our stability. And so now we're in this half kneeling position with the front leg exposed, and we can drive that knee forward, doing it a couple ways that we could lean on top of our knee. So something as simple as just your forearm on top of it and leaning into that a little bit more and helping the weight push into some end ranges and going back and securing or going back and forth through that movement. When we're doing that, it's not going to be long durations. We're not going to go and hold points for like a minute or something like that. We want to do short durations, controlled movements, working back and kind of greasing the groove or like greasing the joints, just preparing, getting us ready for that. If needed, we could always do a light load, like a very light kettlebell to help add weight. But in like a skate park setting, you're probably not going to have kettlebells or anything readily available. So just a forearm on that and just leaning your upper body into it, holding that position to an endpoint and coming back and just working back and forth to it. You could set reps on that, like a 6 to 10, or you could set breath patterns, which that can be a whole nother conversation in itself. But if we have a lot of energy or we're very, very like high stress, we can use our warm-ups as a way to bring that down a little bit. And so just going through. Going through and trying to perform different tricks, you have to be very focused and you have to make sure that you understand the task at hand. And so if you are very, very high up here with stress and energy and you don't have a direction for that, that you're going to be off a little bit in your mechanics or in your movement. So even in the warm-up, we can practice our breath to try to get in more of a relaxed state. But anyways, if we're we're going back and forth, even something like that. So we do something like that. Maybe, maybe even we go through like a lifted calf raise. So from a platform or a block, or even like your skateboard, if you can position it enough, that we go through like a calf raise, control the descent. So now we're adding an element of stability to it, or even like strengthening if we want to put that after in a strength phase, and go back and assess the RDL. Okay, so did it help or did it not? If it didn't help, don't do that exercise. That's the, I think that's the big thing that's lost sometime in this preparation for our workout, is like people just want to drive this warm up because somebody's told them this is what you do to warm up this area or this muscle or this joint, where like going through a system of whatever the application I'm trying to take this in, I'm actually checking that. So I could go through, that that ankle mobilizer. I could go through the single leg RDL, and then I could just get on my skateboard and push back and forth and see, hey, does this feel better or worse? If it feels worse, you need to do something different. If it feels better, awesome. Let's stick with that. But oftentimes people are trying to separate these things where it's one, then two, instead of like, it should just be a combination. And we're actually utilizing a gatekeeper to let us know if it's time to walk through that gate or if it's open, and we have the ability to actually apply what we've just prepared for.
No, that's fantastic. And one thing that I just keep picking up here and that I think we should kind of touch on here in the last little bit of time we have is, you know, when we're saying all this and we're thinking about training, you know, I know for me, I'm sure for both of you, you do the same thing. When you get to the point that we're at and you start to learn more, right? I'm not going to say like we know all this stuff, but when you start to just learn more stuff, and you are a coach like ourselves, it does get hard with programming at times, because you just get so in the weeds with it, with your with where you're at and the way you think about it. The way we think about it, I know, is a little bit more complex. But when it comes to, you know, anybody out there who's listening, you know, it's okay, I don't want to get too deep into skill acquisition necessarily, talking about the steps of that. That'd be for a completely different episode. But just really talking about, you know, understanding that this does take time. And it's something that you have to just get down and get to doing. Like, put your shit down, get on the damn floor and start doing stuff, you know? And for me, it's like, when I think of skateboarding, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if I didn't go outside and put my board in a crack and practice ollies for hours and hours and hours, day after day. So the next day when I came back, that ollie was already in my mind, and how I thought about it was completely fresh. And then I was fresh the next day. You know, when I think about stuff, I just go all the way back to that time, even in work, you know, for like Louis yourself, anybody who's an electrician, anybody who does any carpentry, anything like that, you're going to go on the first day not knowing what to do, barely knowing how to swing a hammer. And then you're going to come out a year later from doing that skill repeatedly over and over and over. You're going to know what you're doing, and it's going to just be it's just going to be autonomous, right? If we wanted to use the term from skill acquisition, but you know, it's just going to be something that you automatically do without thinking about it. And that's what I want to touch on, is the fact of and the importance of people just doing stuff. It doesn't have to be like you're doing a hard workout every single day, but it's just doing those checks with yourself and understanding, okay, like, how am I feeling? How is my body doing? And then, like you said, James, you know, just getting after those exercises and then reassessing with something like a gatekeeper, or even just going as simple as just doing maybe your assessment is that single leg RDL. Like, that might be your assessment with where you're at right now, right? And then just work on that day in and day out. It doesn't have to be something that you're just always thinking about, but our bodies are what gets us through the day. And it is important to take care of that in my eyes. And I feel like anybody who's listening to this podcast most likely agrees. And I think, I don't know for yourselves, like, how do you two get yourselves, you know, because I know at times it is hard, you know, to get after it and do these things. But what do you see helping you when it comes to like coming back to these assessments? Because I know like sometimes we get ahead of ourselves and we want to go do those lifts and stuff like that. How do you keep your guys, like yourselves, in check, and what do you see helping?
Do I go first or do you want to go first?
What, you go first?
See, for me, when I'm working out, my biggest thing is to calm down. I like to just go, lift, rip, go. So for me, it's thinking of the consequences. Like if I don't give the attention to the detail of, for instance, doing a hip airplane, if I'm not stable there and I just, all right, whatever, go to the next movement, I understand the consequences now. Like, all right, you're not gonna, your ceiling's only gonna go so high. The point of being able to move through the whole movement of the hip airplane and be stable throughout is to raise your ceiling to do more things in the gym. But at the same time I'm saying this, it took me a while to even understand that. You know, so when I think of, at least from like my clients, a lot of, you know, gen pop of blue collar workers, people that are more, let's get after and build things people, it's making them understand what their human body is. Because a lot of times I think when we get, like, we're born into this body, so we think we got it going on. I know how to be a human already. It's like, no, you might not even know how to converse with other people. You might not know how to walk properly, all those things. We just think we know. So it's like really slowing down and understanding exactly that skill acquisition, really. Because it's like when I was first handing pliers, I was like, what are these? Now I'm skinning live, no problem. But you're going to understand you don't know yet because it's not your body. It's like humans take a personal hit when it's like, hey, bud, you really don't know how you're squatting. Like it looks terrible. It's going to hurt you. And a lot of times they want to hear it because you're kind of hitting their ego. Like, what do you mean? I don't know how to squat. Like, you know, so it's really getting at least my clients to understand, relax. Like, let's do this over here. Like, let's show you why and explain why. So then we can progress, basically making them understand why we have to spend the time now before we can go crazy over there, before we can throw the heavy music up and get to it. We got to put a little, you know, Barry White on and do some hip airplanes first before we can go get Slipknot on and squat with weight, you know? So that's for me, my challenge is even with myself, understanding, calm down, and the consequences that if I don't take the time and attention to hit these minor details of mobility and stability, then my strength's only gonna go so high. It's only gonna let me go so high. So it's understanding to get those mobility and stability prerequisites down before I can even enter that gate, to let that gatekeeper let me in, you know? So that's for me what it is to first put it in my head to understand that. Because if I don't understand that, how can I even explain that to someone else, you know? So that's what it is for me, is to get it in my head, let's calm down, so then we can even have more fun later on. Like that's the whole thing too, longevity, work out your whole life. You know, the more we spend detail now, the longer we can go later, and the heavier we can go also.
Yeah, I think, like you, Louis, you hit on a lot of great points there. And to kind of build off of that, like, I think it's twofold, that if we're looking at it from a coach's perspective, you have to understand your client. You have to know what kind of client you are and you have to, or what kind of client you have, and you have to program around that. So if you do have a client that likes that intensity, that thrives on it, but right now is not for them to tap into that, that we're trying to train them outside of that, looking at how we're developing our program. So our program, we can set in that program without, I mean, you can get to the point where you're telling your client, hey, you need to slow down. Hey, you need to, you know, do all these things, but there's some that are going to listen and some that aren't. The ones that aren't, you need to adapt your program to them instead of trying to fit them into just the individual mold of how you best know they would benefit from. So looking at things of, okay, we're going to add, like, you like to go real hard and use momentum and like, and just drive that intensity and that feel. All right, guess what we're doing? We're going to do some tempo stuff. We're going to do some pause stuff. Like, I'm going to force you to slow down in the programming, but also realizing that, hey, if the person feeds on that and we can do that in a safe capacity where it's not going to be detrimental to the program and not be detrimental to them outside of the gym, because that's what we keep hitting on, is creating longevity and sustainability in life, that the gym is just a tool to be able to incorporate and utilize, that, okay, if they have a better day because they feel like they drive this intensity, like, let's find a way where they can go ham, where they can dig in that, where they can turn Slipknot up to 20 and go hard, but putting in it again in context that it's not going to be detrimental. So, hey, maybe leg press, maybe calf raises or leg extension, like something that's externally stabilized, that's that reduces their ability to work outside of the motion of the machine. That, hey, you wanna go to fatigue on this? Cool. Like, I'm okay with it there, not okay with it whenever we're trying to drive load on squats. So from the coach's perspective, we have to understand the client that we're working with from an individual perspective. So if you're in the gym trying to take on this mentality and you don't have a coach that's doing that, or maybe you're a coach that's trying to do this for yourself first so you can implement that to your clients, a couple things I'd hit on. Like, one would be, I have this saying called walk when you must, sprint when you can. So with that, understanding that there's good days and bad days. Whenever there's bad days, first off, if we're showing up, that's integrating some consistency. Of course, there's always going to be times where like, hey, it's better not to be in the gym. But the days that you are in the gym but lacking energy, you're tired, something like that, hey, sometimes it's okay if we're just hitting the bare minimum today. If we're taking a little bit slower, if we're going a little bit longer, if we can't just drive off of that intensity or drive off of that feel, or we don't have the motivation to do it, but we're still here, go slower on those days. Nothing wrong with it. We're still putting in the work. And then on the days where you're feeling great, nothing hurts, like, hey, we can drive within the program on that to some of those borders, that we can start pushing that a little bit within reason, but we can use that good day to help progress the program or just work through the program as a whole. And then the other thing that Louis hit on is, like, a lot of times what it comes down to is have a willingness to sacrifice your ego. I think that's where a lot of people run into the issue, is that it's all based on ego around the load, or about, hey, I need to get to this, I need to do this. You don't. And whenever we can actually understand that is this coming from a place of what my original purpose was to, again, benefit some outside factor or create sustainability or longevity in myself as I transition through stages of my life, and this is just a tool I'm using? Or am I getting so far into the rabbit hole that I can only see this ego aspect of it, that, hey, I need to add 20 pounds, or I need to get to squatting because squatting's hard and I want to feel this, or, like, you know, this is everything. Kind of doing a check of yourself of where is this coming from? Like, if I'm not doing the things that my coaches implemented, if I'm not taking the time to get into a relaxed state where I can better approach my exercise, if I'm trying to rush through that, or I didn't do it at all, if I just run over to the bar, like, that's being driven from an ego mentality of basically, I'm better than what this warm up or what this preparation is, that I can just do this squat. And that's where we run into issues. Maybe not on that day, but long term, people like, well, I got away with it today. Next time I can too. So just having that self-reflection and having that perspective of where is this coming to, and do I need to, is that something yourself or with your coach? What is driving that? Why is that happening? And where is that going to create issues long-term?
No, and I love that we're actually wrapping up the episode on this note, because we had about 5 minutes left. And I think that was a great way to, you know, especially for a lot of my listeners, the skateboarders and stuff out there, we have a huge issue with putting our ego aside when it comes to stuff like this, right? So it's like, not necessarily like we're all dickheads and think we're better than people or better than the skater next to us. It's not that. It's more so the things that I've seen is, you know, me reaching out to skaters to see if, you know, they would want to see what I offer. And it's more so the fact that they don't think they need to do these type of things, right? And it's that ego that's going to get you to the point where you're not going to be skating when you're 35, or if you are, you're barely going to be able to do so, and you're going to fall once and be taken out. And, you know, that's a huge thing
for skateboarding and stuff, and it's hard to do. And no, just if you do take this time, you're paying it forward to yourself, and you're paying it forward to your skateboarding, you're paying it forward to your job, you're paying it forward to your pursuit in lifting, you know, anything really. But when you just take this time for yourself and just think about it in this way, then, you know, like you said, longevity becomes the play. And I don't think anybody who's listening would want to just do this for a couple of years and be done. You know, life is life. I don't know why you'd want it to stop. I think it's kind of funny when you hear people ask, well, when do I stop exercising, or when does this, you know, when does this end? Well, it's life. You know, we continue to go through it. And I think that's just a big thing to think about for everybody. You know, look at yourself and just think like, all right, do I really need to be doing these lifts even? Like, that's the thing too. Like for me, I had to internally do that myself, you know, squatting, bench pressing, deadlifting all the time, going for like the big three, like powerlifting a lot, more in that fashion for a little while. And then realizing like, well, why am I, you know, it was fun. Like I wanted to get stronger, but like now let's go back to what I really need so I can get back to skating the way I want to skate, you know? And it's those little things, at times that we just internally got to do with ourselves. And, you know, let's just all kind of do, if we could all just go really quick, a little wrap up from today's episode. I kind of, I'll start us out. I think one thing from today's episode that everybody should take away from this is to be adaptable, right? You know, I went into this episode really wanting to get into James's mind process of picking exercises and programming. Of course, we did that. And one thing that I noticed consistently across the board, to be able to do that is being adaptable, right? So whether it's going from the ways you trained individuals or the way you exercise yourself, and just exploring that and adapting. Like when you figure out that you're at a sticking point, adapt, figure out what's working, what's not, and continue to move forward. I think if you're going to take away one thing, that's one big thing. What do you guys want to take away next? You can.
I would say mind your ego is definitely something huge always. I mean, that's what it is, because this is a paradox of the ego, right? Your ego wants you to say, I'm the best right now. But if you would shut that ego up for 5 seconds, you could be better in the future. So your ego could actually get what it really wants if it would shut up for 5 seconds, you know, or you make it shut up for 5 seconds, you know, and just curb it, curb your ego for a minute, you know? Even when you mentioned about the bars, like squat, deadlift, and bench press, it seems like everyone thinks they have to do that in the gym to be better. So even when you go to someone like, hey, bud, I'm just trying to give you some advice. You have a horrible deadlift. You might want to refrain from doing that. When you try to give them that advice, their ego goes, I have people that look out for me already. You don't have to tell me anything. Okay. Those people aren't looking out for shit. They just want you to feel happy at the moment. You know? So again, it's curb your ego always. That's something I'm always big on. So that's what I'll leave with this one. Curb your ego.
For mine, not to be too self-promotional, but fall in love with the process, and results will be a byproduct. So if we can really get in a mentality in a space where we're enjoying the process of it, we're not so focused on just trying to get to the end result or just trying to hit this goal. It's great to have goals, but if you're not enjoying the journey along that path, what's the point? Like if we hate going to the gym, okay, we need to change how we're going to the gym. We need to change what we're doing in the gym. That's going to dictate longevity if you enjoy it. And so if we find a way that however we're implementing this or however we're utilizing this tool, that we're enjoying the process, that we're falling in love with the process, because that's going to help us be consistent. It's going to dictate longevity. It's going to make us not only showing up whenever we feel great or we have this motivation or whatever, but it's going to help us show up on the shitty days, that we're there because even on the bad days, we're still enjoying it. We might not have a smile on our face, but we're still there and we're going through it because we've fallen in love with it, or we're working on falling in love with the process.
Amazing.
Excellent.
It's no better way to end it like that. You know, talking about self promotions and stuff or whatever, you know, James, let people know where to find you so they can follow along with me and Louie watching you come up with some of the awesome stuff that we talked about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on Instagram at thayer2513. And if you would like to do one-on-one consultations, or interested in training can go to my website at www.byproductperformance.com. That's also in the link in my bio, so it's not too hard to find. Or if you just have questions from hearing this episode, please just reach out through DMs or anything like that. I'd love to have a conversation with you.
And he will reply, everybody. Trust me, he's a nice dude. Don't worry about it. He might look huge and jacked when you go to his Instagram, but he's very nice, so don't stress. All right, everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of the XF Podcast. Hey, get out there, train smart, train hard, and let's do this thing. Oh, no.